This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Walt Disney's fairy tale adaptations are known for their neat, happy endings.
Oh, no! Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no. Oh, this is terrible.
The king, what will he say? What will he do?
But perhaps if it would help.
No, no, nothing can help now. Nothing.
But you see, I have the other slipper.
Oh, good. It worked out. Worked out okay. But you know, in their original states, these tales fully explore the dark and desperate sides of human experience. And that is the kind of story that Raleigh-based writer Maureen Sherbandy likes. Her new book of poetry is called Beyond Fairy Tales, Poems in Concrete and Flesh. And it brings familiar characters into the modern context with a darkly comedic spin. Maureen Sherbandy, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
Now, some people would say that, you know, fairy tales are kind of... What is it about fairy tales that attracted you and made them the subject of this novel?
Well, they're a wonderful vehicle in which to deliver symbols, images, and archetypes. They are something that is creative, that has been around for many, many, many years. And I like to give a new spin to the fairy tales. So they're kind of fun to work with. People relate to them because they're universal and they have themes that we all connect to.
Yeah, and if you read those original, read those Grimm's fairy tales, they are aptly named, those brothers Grimm.
Yes, they're very dark. In one of the earlier one, I think it was called Ash Girl, which was the German translation, the stepsister's eyes got poked out by birds. Yeah. So they are very dark. And now some of the recent movies that our children see have been sanitized, yeah, and made very clean and lovely with all happy endings, yes.
Well, let's get an example now. You have a poem in here that imagines Rapunzel with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So where did that idea, how did those two ideas come together for you?
Well, I started thinking about what Rapunzel is known for, her beautiful long hair. And I thought, well, what would happen if she had cancer? This is not something we read about in the typical fairy tales. So I wrote about Rapunzel losing her hair.
Will you read it for us?
Yes. What the prince doesn't know. 2 months ago, the mammogram revealed a lump, and days since then have passed. She can no longer throw her hair over the wall for him to shimmy up beneath the star-scarred sky. In a nauseous chemo blur, clumps of golden thread fell from her head to the tower's cold stone floor. Still, the witch keeps her here, caged and ill, the left breast completely gone, her head a pale, bald egg. So when the prince yells up to her, Rapunzel, throw down your golden hair, she hides beneath the sterile sheets.
What the Prince Doesn't Know, Maureen Sherbandy, in her latest volume of poetry called Beyond Fairy Tales, Poems in Concrete and Flesh. You have another poem that imagines, you have various versions of Goldilocks, in fact.
Yes, I do. There are certain ones I favor. I have Goldilocks poems. Goldilocks is discontent with her own body. And so in existential Goldilocks, she goes into a cottage in the woods, and she finds that it's called Kafka's Cottage, because I really like Kafka, this existential twist to this one. And she's at ease with Gregor, who's become a cockroach. So this is about transformations. Would you like me to read this
Please
one?
Please do, yes.
Okay. Existential Goldilocks. For years, she's felt awkward in her own girly body. Those frilly dresses and skirts, the pink bow in her hair, the everyday sameness of life nudges her into a state of yawn and nap. Other girls play hopscotch and jump rope, swing for hours at the park, while her eyes envy birds and planes, bright balloons released into the clouds. One day she leaves the schoolyard but doesn't return home. Instead, she abandons the small Jersey suburb and journeys into the woods. When she bumps into a cottage, she lets herself in. Every open door is an invitation, an opportunity, she reasons. No thought is given to trespassing or danger. Bowls of cream of wheat leave her unsatisfied. Chairs and beds in different colors and sizes are not enough to comfort or engage. The three bears that greet her with huge bear, middle bear, and little wee bear growls only bore her. She tries out other cottages deeper into the woods. The circus people cottage built in an oak tree, the beaver cottage near the dam, and even the tiny insect one. At Kafka's cottage, she is most at ease with Gregor, who is suddenly a cockroach. While Gregor waits to become human again, Goldilocks, never comfortable in her own human skin, waits to transform into a golden bird. She sits by the warm fire with Gregor, his dark thorax sprawled out on the floor, her girly body leaning against his hard shell, dreaming of the day she awakens to feathered wings and flies away.
Existential Goldilocks, yeah. Read by Maureen Chauvin. You know, it's interesting to think about the Brothers Grimm actually collecting those stories, trying to sort of recapture their past. Right? I mean, that's the archetype. Who are we as Germans? And so, at the same time, Kafka's writing, you know, about his insects and about his transformations. I mean, there's this moment in kind of modern history when we realize that the archetypes have moved into, you know, sort of beyond the pale.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the archetypes are written about. In most of the fairy tales, we have the damsel in distress, the hero, the devil, the martyr, the wise woman, the great mother, the old hag, and so on. And I think we both fear becoming them, but we also desire, we want to be them also. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of envy in how we, and certainly in that story, Goldilocks. I mean, the modern dissatisfaction with every moment that you're in, either remembering back to a time that you would either recast or redo, or projecting to a time when things might get better, but we're rarely happy in one of the three beds that we're offered.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then after that, Goldilocks, she becomes a bird. So there's a poem about that. But I've also written about Alice in Wonderland creatures, characters, and I think everything is fodder for reinvention.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing, is sort of this reinvention or remaking of all of these archetypes into mm-hmm. sort of – and so Alice in Wonderland is a case in point. Maybe I'll ask you to read that poem for
us. Okay. So I started wondering about Alice, a young girl who fell through a hole in the ground and had such bizarre, surreal experiences. And I began to wonder what would happen when she was an adult. So I decided she would have a lot of problems. So this is Alice at AA. They don't understand. It wasn't a dream or a drunken stupor, hallucinations. She kept searching for holes in the ground. During her stormy adolescence, she turned to gin, whiskey, anything she could find. Every bottle was inscribed with, "Drink me." She heard the sob of mock turtle at night. White rabbit tumbled through stars and grass, led her into bars, alleys, dives. High-pitched screams of the queen repeated, "Off with her head." She tells about the small door, how she shrank to Thumbelina miniature, then grew giant large. She has size issues, moves from 2 to 14, back to 2 again. She fears shrinking into nothingness. Her 20s pass spent in abusive relationships with men, claiming to be kings and princes. Months she shuffled through poker rooms, searching for the right cards. Giant teacups clank in the restless air on sleepless nights. At AA meetings, she's afraid to cry, not wanting to drown recovering alcoholics in her own pool of sadness. She no longer knows what is real and what is not. She plays Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers on a Walkman, reads Hal until she recites it by memory, reads This Side of Paradise until the pages fall out, and she removes every manhole cover, searching for her lost youth.
Alice at AA, Maureen Chirbandi, Beyond Fairy Tales. Every suggestion that Lewis Carroll may have himself been under the influence of something. He wrote said
yes,
character.
Yes.
But so, and what about, did you go back to some of these now? Because it's always fun to go back to these nursery rhymes and fairy tales as an adult. Did you go back to them?
Well, I did, because when I was attending Queen's University of Charlotte, getting my MFA in poetry, I decided to do my thesis looking at the fairy tales, the history of fairy tales, and other poets who have done the same thing that I have been doing. For some reason, I can't let go of the fairy tales. My first chapbook that came out in 2007 was called After the Fairy Tale. And then I finished graduate school in 2012, and the thesis that I presented was about the use of fairy tales in poetry historically.
What did you find? What were some of the more interesting discoveries for you when you looked at how other poets used fairy tales?
Well, first of all, I found that there were a few books, I think, written by Kate Bernheimer, who's sort of a fairy tale expert. And what she found, because she had two different anthologies where she interviewed writers about their favorite fairy tales, and men tended to favor one fairy tale. They had one favorite, and women had several favorites. So I found that interesting. I'm not sure if it's because more females are read to, perhaps, from fairy tales. So maybe they have more favorites. Maybe they relate to more of the archetypes.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
Right. So I found that interesting. Yeah. And the themes were the same across the board. Louise Gluck wrote fairy tale poems. John Ashbery has written fairy tale poems. But the themes of rejection, hate, love, good and evil, and so on, were consistent.
Unreliable adults show up a lot in fairy tales, don't they?
Yes, yes, they do. And terrible adults. I think my favorite fairy tale is Hansel and Gretel. I'm not quite sure why these children are rejected by the stepmother and sent off into the woods, and they come upon the witch's candy house. I think it might have been the candy house that interested me, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of adults who should be more responsible here and just aren't.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, and we won't have time to read this one because I do want to get to another, but I know you've written a poem about motherhood and Superman's girlfriend.
Right? Oh, right, right. Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is Superman's girlfriend. He's always flying away at midnight, leaving to conquer violence and crime. I wait in her high-rise loft beneath the duvet cover, stitched with that giant S. I'm starting to show, and that baby kicks with the force of a grown man. I fear managing a super toddler, a 2-year-old boy, zooming around the ceiling and out the window. Nothing's prepared me for this sort of mothering. Maybe I'll let Super Dad stay home while I work. He can fly faster than a toddler. What was I thinking, mating with a superhero? I just wanted a normal life, but those tights and that muscle-raised chest sped up my heart, made me lose all reason. He saved me from that falling piano. What girl has the strength to turn away from gallantry? All the women in this entire city seethe with jealousy. This should be enough. It should be.
Poet Maureen Shirbandi takes us beyond fairy tales on the state of things. That's the title of her latest volume of poetry. So you've got to kind of ranged far afield here. You've got superpowers.
Right.
Fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis Carroll stories. And Mr. Potato Head.
Right.
Who I believe is a Hasbro toy and not a fairy tale. But go ahead. I love this poem.
This is in the third section of the book. And in this section, I actually have prose poems, flash pieces. There's a gray area between flash fiction and prose poetry, so call it what you would like to call it. This is Mr. Potato Head Reveals His Secrets. Mr. Potato Head nests in the girl's hands, whispering tales about potato land, about the famine massacre in Ireland, how he lost distant cousins, uncles, aunts to the disease. At night, his ears sometimes detach and fly to Connecticut and hover over Yale's ivy-covered buildings. He listens for clues about how to create a life beyond deep fryer, oven, and microwave. He says his mom and dad traveled with the circus, dressed as tiny, plump clowns and mini elephants. They dreamed of flying and swinging across the tented air, but their stiff stub arms would not allow it. When the girl's father makes those Cajun spice sliced potatoes for breakfast, Mr. Potato Head rolls beneath the dresser, knocking off his own nose to avoid the scent of fried potato death. Too much for the girl, she yanks out his plastic mouth, silencing the truth.
You were dancing with the white rabbit when you wrote that one, girl. That's
I have a wild imagination.
that occurred to you in a flash? It's been a long time. When was the last time you played with Mr. Potato Head?
I actually have him on my writing desk. This is one of many Mr. Potato Head poems I have written, yes.
Well, I have about a minute and a half left, but I have to ask you, you just discovered a memoir, essentially, your grandfather's memoir.
Right. My grandfather was a country doctor in upstate New York, a town called Canandaigua, and I used to go on house calls with him to visit the farmers and the American Indians that he treated. And he had written a memoir that was published in Germany in German. So because I do not know German, I have not read it, and I found just last night online a translated version of it.
He escaped the Holocaust, right?
I mean. Right. He escaped the Holocaust. He got out in April of 1938, mm-hmm. but then he had to send for my mother, her brothers, and his mother, and not his mother, his wife, quite a bit after that, and they just got out in time, and I was very close to him, my opa, German for grandfather, and it was just amazing last night that I was reading his words.
We'll have to get you back on and talk more about that, and I'm assuming that it's going to show up someday in a volume of poetry.
I have written some poems about him, but those are harder to write about for some reason.
Maureen Shirbandy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with
us. Thank you so much.
Maureen Shirbandy is a Raleigh-based writer and a poet. Her new book is Beyond Fairy Tales, Poems of Concrete and Flesh, and you can find out more about it at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Megan Mataferi, Anita Rao, and Will Michaels. Our intern is Charlie Shelton. Robin Copley is our technical director. Our news director is Brent Wolf. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.